Hi, I'm Becky Sims, and welcome to Behind the Future, the podcast from Aspiration Digital. We're here to unlock digital careers, one conversation at a time. On each episode, I'll be joined by a student co-host. We'll be interviewing amazing people from across the industry to learn about how they got started in their career and what it is that they do. Let's dive in to find out the secrets to their success. Now, I had a proper insight of you on this one that I knew it was going to be a good one, but wow, what a good conversation.
Yeah.
What did you think? What was most impactful?
I think just the fact that he built his own positive personal image, him being a problem solver, spreadsheet guy. just building that from the beginning.
It's so true, isn't it? He really built his brand of what he brings to work every day and also probably in other settings, but allowing people to know who he was and to talk about him. So let's see what you'll think of Matt and see what you'll talk about him, and maybe you'll send him some problems to solve.
Hi, I'm Matt and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Future. My fabulous co-host today is the wonderful Jessica. Jessica, tell us a bit about yourself.
So I'm Jessica. I'm studying media, business and economics in A-level. And I'm hoping for a career in the digital industry, wherever that is.
Amazing. Well, I'm hoping these conversations are going to be useful then. So we have a fantastic guest with us today, the wonderful Matt.
Hello.
Matt, tell us a bit about yourself.
Hello, I'm Matt. I am the Innovation and Automation Lead at Reflect Digital, and I look at ways to incorporate technology, AI, automation into the work that we do every day, whether that's to make our teams better, faster, or to generally improve the way that we work.
Amazing. Well, where do we want to start?
Well, let's start at the beginning. How did you get into it?
I worked at the Students Union at my university as my sort of first role in digital. So I was doing the social media management. I did a little bit of video, a bit of photo. And that's where I sort of started to come into contact with digital as a career. The thing that I was studying was called Computing for Digital Media. And it was lots of different modules from different courses stuck together. So it was great at sort of getting an idea of what kind of thing I enjoyed, but fundamentally it didn't prepare me for a specific role. And so it was that Students Union role that really sort of gave me the opportunity to go, oh, I can actually make a career out of this, and this is what I want to do. So that was great. And that's where I ended up meeting my soon-to-be husband. And he was working simultaneously at Students Union, but also on his family farm back over in Wiltshire. So 300 miles a week round trip, not great. We decided to move to Bath, just down the road, it happened, from a digital publisher. And so they were a big publisher of tech, gaming, all sorts of different websites and magazines. And so I joined their graduate scheme. And that was sort of getting an idea about SEO, paid activity, all the kinds of things that we do as a digital marketing agency at Reflect. So that was a great opportunity to really see, in terms of what areas I wanted to get into, what kind of work that I could do, but also where my skills were. And it was only at that point, once I started getting into sort of spreadsheets and data and analysis, that I really found, this is what actually gets me excited, what gets me up for work every day. So I started to lean more into that. And eventually it got to the point where I was finding these problems that other people were having in the company and going, there must be a better way. There must be a solution to this stuff. Because we're spending hours and hours and hours going, oh, that's a pain. And it never really went beyond that. So I started to look into Google Sheets, automations, sort of the big data stuff, and finding solutions to the stuff that we were having problems with every day. So that was sort of the graduate scheme. Towards the end of that, I actually looked into, okay, what's next? Where do I go from here? And so I pitched to the company that I wanted to work on just the data. I wanted to build solutions, pipelines, look at engineering some of that stuff myself using code and programs. And so that's when I sort of got into the stuff that I do today at Reflect, which is the automation, the AI, the really exciting stuff, in my opinion. So I worked there for a couple of years, had a really big success in terms of transforming the way that we did things and actually making an impact on the business. And so then I was looking for my next big step, and someone that I'd met working at that publisher happened to also work at Reflect Digital. So reached out to him, looked for an opportunity with you guys because loved what you did. And here I am working for Reflect doing a very similar thing.
Quite a few years in now, two years, is it?
Two and a bit,
yeah. Amazing. I feel like there's loads to unpick there, isn't there?
Yeah.
What if we, so if we go back, the student union job, how did that come about? Was that, did you know you wanted to be able to try applying the skills that you were learning in a kind of work sense? Because a lot of people at uni will go and get a bar job or will be in Sainsbury's or whatever.
I think that was partly there was a co-op on campus. So it was deciding whether I wanted to go work stacking shelves or to do something slightly more exciting. And the students union role came up and was being advertised as a graduate position. You can sort of do whatever you want alongside your studies, but we need someone who can produce content and go to student events. And that was where I sort of saw it as a more exciting way of making a living while also studying. I think it was only once I really started getting into it, because I just at that point started to get into photography as a career and a hobby, that I realized, oh, actually, I really do want to do this more, because it was something that on your course, you're always a bit sort of, yeah, it's technically work and it's not that exciting because you've got to document it all and it's not really applicable to a real world situation. But working with the Students' Union, you then go, oh, this is what it actually means to do this as a job, taking a bit more ownership over it rather than being told what to do, leading that stuff. So yeah, that was...
Nice, nice. And then that led you on. And so first job as a graduate scheme.
Yes.
Was that competitive? Because I imagine a big company as Futurol to get into that.
Yeah.
Must be lots of people looking for those opportunities.
Lots of people. I think there were four rounds of interviews and tests and applications to get onto it. And they were only supposed to hire one person. And it eventually got down to two of us. And they actually told us there's two people competing for the same job. And they told us a bit about the other person, which I'm not sure they were supposed to do. But they were like, you're against one other person in this final round. You have to prepare this big presentation on what you would do. I think it was like one of their homes brands, and they wanted to branch out and improve the website or produce new content for a campaign on this homes website. And so we had to prepare what we thought we could do for their Christmas campaign. So we got into the actual interview setting, did all the presentations, and they all disappeared into a back room to have the conversation about which one of us they were going to hire from the two. And then they came back out and said, we've just got approval from the CEO. We can have both of you.
Oh,
so we both ended up joining at exactly the same time, doing the same job on the graduate scheme. So.
Did you do your presentations in front of each other?
No, not in front of each other.
I was we were. Say, that's a bit scary, isn't it?
We were put into different rooms, so I think we saw each other crossing the different halls and going,
"Oh, trick them up." No.
Well, yeah, we did joke for a couple of years afterwards that she had a hitman out on me just in case.
Oh, lovely. That's nice as well when you start a job like that to have someone alongside you on the same journey, because it's so daunting, isn't it? Your first proper job, and you're like, "Whoa, what's going on?" Especially in a huge business where you're like, huge. I'm never going to know everybody here. But like, this is huge. So yeah, what do you remember from that time?
I think it was exactly what you said. It's having that almost like partner to go, am I crazy or is this confusing? Like having someone to talk things out. I mean, big companies always love their acronyms. So you had someone that you could ask, like, do you know what this means? And go, okay, no, that's fine. You don't know either. But it was also really nice because we had that experience of going through all these different areas and learning about the business, but then branching off and finding the things that not necessarily the same things that we enjoyed. So we diverted off and did things that maybe the other person wasn't doing, came back and said, oh, I actually prefer this. And I was like, I don't like that a bit at all. So I think about 2 years in, we started to have very different roles, having started from the same place. So it was nice having that sort of partner in it, but also being able to see each other grow into different areas that actually were more suited to our skills.
Love that.
Throughout the whole process, what made you stand out compared to everyone else, do you think?
I struggle to remember what they said in the initial interview specifically, but it was something about the fact that I'd considered lots of different possibilities and like the practical application of it. And I think that's something that, especially in any interview situation, that I've always tried to do is move beyond the sort of generic answers and go, actually, in the real world, what does this mean? What is my answer gonna tell them about me, who I am, what I can do, what I enjoy doing? And so when I was looking at the campaign stuff for that Christmas campaign, it was great. Do you have the capacity to actually do any of this stuff? And I asked those questions in the interview at the start to go, I've considered this. It's not in here because I don't have that information to prep. But now when I'm talking about it and presenting it back to you, I can relate to what you've told me and say, ah, actually, this is clearly going to be a problem. But we can solve it if we do this X, Y, and Z. So it's almost the forward planning and trying to understand the problem that you're being faced with before then answering the question. And I think that's what's always given me a little bit of an edge, is that consideration about what am I actually being asked in the real world.
When did you realise you were a problem solver?
I think during that graduate programme, actually.
Yeah.
Because, again, it was that thing of I can see other people struggling with things, and all of those conversations ended in, oh, well, like, surely we should do something
it's
about
not it.
It's a problem.
Like,
yeah. What's next? What's the next step? And so that was when it was almost like an itch that I couldn't stop myself from going, yeah, but we can fix that. There must be a better way. And so that's when I started getting into the automation side of things, because quite often it was, oh, I've got this big spreadsheet that I spend 8 hours a month doing manually. I'm like, well, that can't be the best way of doing that. Surely everyone's had this problem before and someone on the internet knows some sort of solution for it. So that's when I really started to get into the problem solving. And I mean, I just like being helpful, I think, is the thing.
Yeah.
So you'd present something back to someone and they're like, oh, I had no idea that was possible. And those are the moments that I think really excite me and sort of make me want to do more.
I love that, because it's the kind of stuff that doesn't always surface as you're studying.
Yeah.
And as you're, whether it's at A-levels or whether it's when you go on to university or you're doing an apprenticeship, you don't always realise those things. And sometimes it is more in hindsight or when you're in the experience. But it's like, actually, how could you awaken your brain to be more aware of that? Because the earlier you realise that, the more you can start using it as a superpower.
Definitely. And I think it's leaning into being a nerd has been like my driving force on that stuff, where find something that you love, find something that is your specialism, and be the person for that. And every place that I've worked since then, I've always tried to be the Google Sheets guy or the AI guy, or like having something that you can sort of tie yourself to as, this is my banner, this is what I care about, this is what I represent as a person, and almost an opportunity for other people to talk to you about something that maybe they don't know that much about.
As a brand, though, you've nailed this, because I can say this honestly because we work together, but the amount of times I start my sentence, Matt, there must be a better way. Look at this.
Exactly.
What can we do about it?
Yeah.
And then that's brilliant, because when you get known for that in an organisation, that's when you start, oh, we should have Matt in this conversation and Matt should come to this. And so it's like, how do you find your thing so that it's, well, Jess should be in this conversation. We need Jessica here for this. This should be. And it's, yeah, how do you find that thing? Because that's powerful.
It is. And I think especially learning from being in a large business where you have maybe 3,000-4,000 other people who are all specialists in what they do, having something that's almost like that personal brand, that personal identity beyond just Matt. It's Matt is always attached in my head to AI or Google Sheets or automation, or, oh, he's useful to talk to about this thing. That's what really gives you the standout option of, oh, I can move my career forward by being in that room with that person and having that conversation.
Mm, you probably didn't realise you were creating a brand at the time, but
no.
It was the Matt brand you were working on. I like that. I really like that. I was going to ask you something there around, so you said you got to this point where you pitched for a different role.
Mm.
How does that come about?
I think it's looking at your career as a problem-solving exercise. In the same way that I was doing it for all the business problems, I was looking at how my own sort of time was being spent. And I was like, oh, I keep having to do this other thing or these responsibilities that really aren't the best fit for my skills. And actually, if I was given the time, I could do X, Y, and Z. And I really think that's going to make a difference to the business and it will be helpful for these people and whatever. So it's sort of almost pulling that together into a business case and an argument and saying, actually, this is a business. If I think I can make a bigger impact doing something else, I need to talk to people about that. I need to tell the people who can make that decision that this is what I think. And whether or not they say yes is sort of irrelevant to the point that if they don't know, they're never going to say yes. So that was the real pitch for me, was I can do more by spending my time doing things that I enjoy and that I have the skills in. And especially when you're working in an area that is a specialism or you find your thing, combining that with different skill sets and different knowledge gives you that special edge case of, I mean, in my case, it was SEO combined with data. And that meshed together so well that creating a new role just made sense.
Mm, I didn't realize you had prior for this because you did this to us as well.
I did do it to you as well.
This is like a serial. So if anyone ever wants to hire Matt, this is what will happen to you.
Yeah.
But in a good way.
Exactly.
Because it's been the best thing, the role that we've moved you into. So I guess, yeah, maybe tell us a bit more about when you started with Reflect, what you were doing and what you'll do. And let's talk about the pitch process, because I mean, I know it firsthand, but Jessica won't have heard this before. And it was pretty impressive how you got us to create a role, find budget.
Well, this is a whole new department. It's
great.
Yeah. I think at Future, it was a slightly different option in terms of what I was asking them for, because there were two different teams. One was working in SEO, and one was like the business intelligence, the analytics, the working with the data side. And they were never really tied together at all. And that was where I was like, if I could be the sort of connecting link between these things, we can unlock this capability or this new strategy or save us this time. And working there was when I met Andy, who was head of SEO at Reflect Digital. And that was the introduction to Reflect, was you can come in as an SEO manager. And so I obviously had the experience with SEO, but the thing that really drew me to Reflect was the rest of the business. It was the ethos, it was the values, it was actually a really good place to work. And I think getting your foot in the door and being able to say, I have all of these other skills, they're an option, and talking about that during the job interviews was definitely part of it. But I can functionally fulfill this role as an SEO manager. So that's where I started. And it was then, once I was in the door and having the conversations and going, ah, the same problems I was finding at the publisher, I can also see here. So let's have that pitch process. And there's different companies have different things that they care about. Reflect is great because it's not just about business performance. It's about making sure that everyone feels fulfilled and is doing things that they're great at and that they love and enjoy coming to work every day. So that was something that I lent on in part of that pitch process to come up with this new role, was like, I really love doing this thing. And also it affects the business and it gives us all of these great benefits. And so that became my pitch for the role.
Well, and also part of it was, this is going to help others in the team. Like it was multifaceted, multi-layered, and not to stroke his ego, we're pretending to be here for a minute, but like he really nailed it. And I think, like, yeah, you only get so many of those opportunities in your career, because actually if you'd got that completely wrong, you might have then got really kind of fed up and thought, oh, they don't really listen to me, it's not the right place for me. We might have been like, oh, he's trying to do something crazy here, he doesn't really fit in anymore. So you have to pick your right time when you know enough. Like if you'd done that week two, you wouldn't have known enough to get that pitch right in the way that you did. You left it, I don't know, it was about a year in probably, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But you'd built up enough knowledge to really give us something that actually was just unignorable, unknowable. We couldn't say no. I've made a new word there. Like, we literally couldn't say no. We were like, okay. And you'd put numbers behind it to go, do you know what? This is then, like, as much as the soft side of it's really important to us, it's business at the end of the day as well. So you've got to know that it stacks up financially, and you'd done that as well and have continued to do that. Now you're in the role of going, look, see, following it through, it's happening. So yeah, really exciting.
It's finding what the business cares about, because every business you ever join will talk very publicly about the things that they're measuring, the things that they care about, the things that are success to them. And so really listening to that and leaning into that is how you can make arguments that they care about. So for us, it was very much, we need it to be a success. We're a small business. We have to make sure that the time we spend is valuable. We care about this metric and this value. And they had a strategy.
Yeah.
They had an overall sort of 3 to 5 year plan. Great. Look at that. Understand what they want to achieve and how you can help them get there. And that argument sort of builds itself.
Yeah. I love that. I love that.
Well, your job is literally technology and it's constantly changing. How do you feel about that? Is it scary? Is it exciting?
I think it's a bit of both. Anyone who tells you it's just one or the other is either lying or not very intelligent, because there's so much that you can do and achieve with technology, but applying it in the right way is really difficult. And I think part of my role is just keeping up with the pace, like you say. So, I mean, AI is the obvious example here, because that is changing weekly. I mean, God knows how many newsletters I have to read every week to go, wait, that's gone and that's come in and that's new and I can try this. And just, there's so many ideas that I think it's keeping a track on what is practical is really, really valuable, because you then have to go, okay, in a real business case, it's great. We can use AI to do this thing. does that make a difference? Is that actually going to help us? So I think that's where it becomes quite difficult, because you are excited about all these things, but realistically, you're not going to get around to doing them. So the prioritization is really quite important.
How are you finding it with AI? Because I suppose part of it with AI is it's an amazing tool, but it's only as good as the person using it and how they're prompting it and how they're choosing what to do with what comes out of it, because also it's not always correct, etc. How are you coping with that? And because you're leading us as a team, trying to get people to use it more, but also trying to get them to do the right thing with it.
Yeah. I mean, AI is a very impressive hammer for very specific nails. It's not an all-purpose tool. It's very good at what it does, but it's also very good at misleading people to think it's good at what it's not good at. So when we look at a particular problem, half the time, AI isn't the solution, even if that's what started the conversation. It's something that's more accurate or less risky than deploying AI and hoping that it's correct. So we look at automation, we look at code, machine learning, other options as well as AI, and treating that as part of the toolkit, not a general solution.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It still baffles me, like, how often AI is still wrong with things that you wouldn't think it would be wrong about, and how it just doesn't even really know. Like, I was asking it the other day, I was playing with the new ChatGPT image generator, and I asked it to generate, we were trying to put some artwork for a client into a bus stop, and I was like, surely AI can do this. And so I gave it the image I wanted, and I said, just into a bus stop. So first of all, it then gives me back this bus stop without my image. It had made its own version of the image, and I went, no, my image, don't change the image, fit it in the bus stop. And then it gave me just a blank bus stop, and it said, here it is. And I was like, but that's not it. And it was like, yeah, I can't actually do that. And I was like, oh, well, why have you led me up the garden path here? Because this would, like, if that was an employee, a team member, you'd be really fed up. You'd be like, why did you make out you could do it when you actually can't? But it's frustrating.
Confidently wrong is what AI usually is. I mean, yeah. We see it with stuff like Google AI Overviews, where it's talking about answering the search query in the SERP. And that is citing sources that aren't correct about 60% of the time. Only about 40% of what it puts in there is correct, which for people who don't know that and don't know how it works on the back end, they just read the top line. They don't even look at the citation that actually it's trying to source that from. And they go away with completely the wrong idea. What they talk to you about to other people is then wrong. And yeah. It starts this cascade where actually if it had just said up front, I don't know, yeah, it'd be much better.
Well, John, I had it the other day. I was prepping for Brighton SEO for doing the introductions. And I was like, I wonder if AI can help me have a stat that will help me kind of lean into introducing the next person. So I gave it, these are the people, these are their talk topics. Could you go away, come back with some bits? And I said, I want sources for all of them. So it gave me all the stats. And for each one, it had source, colon, blank. Next thing, source, colon, blank. And I was like, you didn't actually put the sources. Oh, you wanted real sources. Yes, I would like real sources. So then it went away and gave me the same stat and then gave me links that didn't work. And I was like, what, you're just playing with me now. So it is, you really have to pay attention because it says it so confidently and looks like it could be real. But actually, eventually this said to me, oh, sorry, I just made up what I thought was kind of the right thing. You actually want me to go and find the things? And I was like, yes, I do. And eventually it gave me some bits. But still, I was like, I am checking every one of these.
As you should. It's 100%. Human in the loop, I think, is the way that we look at it. And especially when it's talking about things like that, quite often AI is being a parrot. So based on its training data, it's just coming up what it thinks it should look like when you're responding to that question, not actually doing what you're asking it to do.
Yeah. And I suppose as humans, we say things all the time that I could say, where's your source, Matt? And you're like, well, I don't know. I kind of know some of this stuff. I'll have to go and find my source. And maybe I said 40% and it should have been 38 or whatever. So I suppose, yeah, but we expect it to be accurate. We're going to it as a source of truth.
Exactly.
And it's not always. So, oh, it's interesting. It is going to change the world of work.
It is. And I think it'll change how people expect things to be done and how fast people expect things to be done. And I think there's definitely going to be room for human verified, slower paced, more authentic content solutions, processes, because they're going to become more and more valuable as more of the internet, more of businesses are completely automated and generatively AI powered. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the specialism becomes. It might be proving AI wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it? Yeah. We're at this
just junction that we don't quite know what's coming next because it is moving so fast. There's people trying to predict, but we don't really know.
Not at all. And I mean, the pace of change keeps getting faster. We've seen it with something like DeepSeek, which is obviously a Chinese powered LLM, but it used training data that was automated in order to train itself to be better based on the training that someone else had already done in America for OpenAI's models. And so it's just going to keep stacking on top of each other. And eventually we'll get to the point where it's faster than a human can really intervene with. And so we need to be aware of actually, do we track and work on what's now available, or do we think long term? Do we predict where it's going to go and try and meet it when it gets there?
Just a quick note from me. We'd love you to hit the subscribe button. This helps us more than you might realize when it comes to growing this podcast, ensuring we can bring you the best guests possible. Thank you. Back to the episode.
Going back a little bit, you said that Andy, you kind of knew him and got the job at Reflect. Is networking important?
Definitely. I mean, it's who you know, not what you know, is the fundamental rule of most businesses, because you can have the conversations in your business about the best topics and you can have all the knowledge. But if you're not talking to someone who can make a difference or help you get where you want to go, it's not going to move the needle. You're not going to change the future of your career, the future of the business, if you're not in the right room with the right people. So networking is really powerful. There's loads of ways that you can do that. I mean, the case for me was someone I already worked with, I had a relationship with, and I trusted. And that can be really valuable because, I mean, Andy worked at Reflect, came to the publisher, then went back to Reflect. That's the ultimate vote of confidence to go back somewhere after you've left. So that was really good. And I trusted him. I trusted what he knew. And so that was great for me to be able to know, okay, Reflect is obviously a great place to work. But I think it applies when you're staying within the same business as well. Is if you can talk to someone and go, ah, they know about that area of the business far more than I do. Let's talk to them. Even if it's a casual conversation over lunch or, oh, can I put in a 15-minute meeting just to talk through a problem that I'm having? Those kind of conversations and that kind of environment that you build for yourself can really help drive your career.
You work remotely. How do you find that?
It's complicated, I think. I started working remotely during the pandemic, and that is obviously a huge shift for a business that does thrive on those kind of office conversations. I think the pace of work that I was used to also affected that. So working remotely when you've got weeks and weeks and weeks to go backwards and forwards and make those decisions in an in-house process, get it right over a long period of time, that's great. But working for an agency, everything's so much faster paced. You have to be on it. You have to understand, okay, I need to get that meeting in today. Where can I meet that person, whether it's virtually or in person? And I think that's the real blend that we've found has worked best is actually I do need to come into the office still. And there are times when it's better to have those conversations in person than to try and get a meeting in.
Yeah, it's having that balance, isn't it? And that flexibility. But also, I suppose, at the point that you went to remote working, because I'm guessing that graduate program with Future, that was all in person, was it?
All in person, all in a big office and for a big company. So you had struggles getting meeting rooms. Oh, someone's in our meeting room, they've overrun. So we have to go sit in a corridor somewhere. So there are benefits to working remotely and having those virtual spaces. But I think it is, finding what works for you and works for the business that you're working for. And definitely with Reflect, I think it's, again, that hybrid, flexible approach, what works best for different types of meetings and different people and understanding who you're working with. Some people might get more out of talking to you in person and be more excited about things than over Slack or email.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's probably, you've touched on something else that's a good thing for our students that are listening at home to know, that it doesn't matter where you work, you will always have meeting room wars.
Yes, always. It's never enough.
Unless it's just purely virtual. There's always dramas with meeting rooms. Even when we added meeting rooms, we still had meeting room dramas. So yeah, trying to find a space, I think especially if you're working somewhere really collaborative, it's you always need to find somewhere and then you just get inventive. I've seen people having meetings out by the lifts before. I'm like, okay, that's different.
Being flexible with it is a really good skill as well. It's something that I found worked quite well when you were working in a big office like that. You were having meeting room troubles is going, let's just go for a walk. Let's have that conversation outside. We don't need to be in a meeting room. We just need to have that time and that space together to be able to talk something through.
Yeah, I love a walk-in meeting. Great. We did our mental health first aiders catch up the other day and two of the mental health first aiders were out walking for the meeting. And I was like, yes, this is what it's all about, because actually being tied to a desk is quite tricky sometimes. I mean, your life, you live in spreadsheets and data and code, and but sometimes to have the idea part, you need to be as far away from that as possible. Would you agree?
Definitely. And I mean, it's why blending skills is, I think, the biggest way to get that specialism and build that brand, is because I can talk to someone who's really, really technical about the very nitty-gritty stuff, but what's really going to move the needle is having those top-level conversations with the people who maybe aren't specialists in that area, and being able to go, I need this amount of money to do this thing, it will deliver this benefit, and really abstracting away all of the complicated stuff and being able to give the best case to the person that you're talking to. And so knowing your audience there is a skill in itself.
Where did you learn those communication skills? Because that's at the heart of that, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I don't think there's a good way to standardize it. There's no one way to learn how you work best. But there was a really great session that I came across when I was applying to speak at a conference. So Brighton SEO, big SEO conference, biggest in Europe. And first-time speakers are really highly encouraged. And so they run a training session to get people up to speed. And what they talked about was actually, you have an expectation about what a good speaker means and what they are, but that doesn't mean that you are going to fit into that role. Actually, if you find the way that you communicate best, the way that you get your brand, your ideas across best, that's going to be far more effective than trying to mimic someone else's style. No one's going to be Steve Jobs except Steve Jobs. No one's going to talk about things in the same way that a really professional person in that particular industry with their life experience is going to. So finding your style and your approach is actually the best way to learn how to communicate effectively. Because if you can get your ideas across in a way that you understand while knowing your audience, that's going to work.
Love that. Did you find it nerve-wracking getting on stage?
Always. I mean, they started me on the main stage in front of 2,000 people, and they've slowly sort of worked back from there to smaller stages. But I think it is a great experience if you can put yourself through that to sort of push outside of your comfort zone. And those are where you find those learnings. Where I developed the communication skills was by putting myself in a situation where I needed them. And actually, those are the real sort of motivators to get you to the point where, oh, I feel confident and comfortable doing that kind of thing now.
Yeah. And deciding if that is for you as well, because some people, that just isn't who they want to be standing on a stage, especially for 2,000 people. It's it takes a different type of person, doesn't it, for that, compared to I might be happy to speak in a meeting. But for some people, that's a brave moment as well. Mm. So knowing like how to find your voice in a meeting and how to go, do you know what? No, I'm going to own what I want to say here. I thought about it. I'm ready to say it. I'm going to say it. And I think those kind of skills are really important to start as early as possible, so that you're able to communicate effectively and be not just a passenger in a meeting, but actually part of deciding what's going to happen.
Definitely. And I think it's knowing what you don't like is arguably just as important as knowing what you do like. And getting things wrong is the best way to learn about what fits you, what fits your style, what you want to do. So putting yourselves in situations where maybe you don't know if you'll like something or not will give you that information to go, oh, well, I don't like that. Probably the opposite might be something I enjoy.
This is for both of you, really. In your jobs, would you say being confident in communicating and just being confident in general is important? Like, if you're not confident, do you think you're going to be quite far behind?
I guess it depends what you mean by confident. I think confidence is something that you ask most people, they'll say, oh, I'm not confident, I'm really nervous about this thing. And I mean, every speaker who's gone onto a stage has said, if you don't have the butterflies, you don't care enough. And it's finding what confidence means for you that will really drive you to go, oh, I can do this thing, even if I am nervous. They say about bravery is it doesn't matter and it's not brave if you're not feeling the fear. So I think, yeah, communicating and finding ways that you enjoy doing that is really important, but not necessarily feeling like you have to not be scared about doing things to be successful.
Yeah, I think also having good leadership around you, like I know the people in our team that aren't as confident, and I will create space to hear their voices. So I will know they're less likely to speak up in a meeting, but I know they're holding on to something great in there, which either I'll find a way to tease it out of them in the meeting and create the space, or have that conversation afterwards. And I think that's really important, because not everyone will be that person that wants to, or they find it really hard, especially it depends on the size of meeting, but you can end up with far too many cooks in meetings sometimes, and it makes it really hard. And even sometimes I find myself taking a back seat where I'm just like, I'm just going to let this be and I'll find my way to make my point to whoever needs to hear it at another point, because there's just too many voices and it's just too much and we need to finish soon kind of thing. So you know, but I think, yeah, it comes down to good leadership around people. But confidence helps, but confidence isn't something you have or you haven't. It's something, it's something you develop over time. And it's a muscle you flex, and you feel more confident the more you do things and go, nothing bad happened. Yeah. It worked. They listened. They took my idea. They did it. And it's trying to create those opportunities to. And the thing is, right now in school, you will have opportunities to. I'm sure they give you moments to. Right. Who wants to come and present what they did for their project or whatever? And actually, it's more scary in front of your peers. So like, actually, I don't know if you'll agree with this, Matt, but I find if I'm practicing to do a talk, doing it for the team is more scary than doing it on the stage, even if there's 2000 people.
Definitely. And I mean, you look at a sea of people and you go, oh, I'm not talking to any individuals. I don't really care what they think because I can't identify them. Talking to a team, you're like, oh, I'm going to see that person for the next 6 weeks for these other meetings. And you're thinking about that and getting into the head about it. It's actually, you can really see the future of sort of everything that you do happening at the same time as you're giving that talk to your team. So yeah, I think there's a real opportunity for a lot of people to do those kinds of things that maybe push them outside of their comfort zone. And they don't expect it. They don't expect to be good at it. But actually, they can be the best ways of
doing it. And so actually doing it at school when it feels uncomfortable and scary is the absolute best time to start to flex that muscle and go, do you know, what does it matter if so-and-so says something to me afterwards? Like, I had the guts to get up there and say it. I had the one to put my hand up and go, I'm going to present. And even being here today, like, this is a massive boost for your confidence to go, I can do this. And this is going to go out on YouTube and Spotify. And people are going to listen
Don't scare
to
her.
It. Oh, yeah. So, you know, you're fine. But it's, it's a muscle that you just have to keep working. And actually being reflective on afterwards to go, oh, I did that. And that was a really brave thing to do. And actually nothing bad happened. Only good things happened. Or something wasn't quite how I wanted it. How could I change it next time? It's almost like as soon as you've done it, you want to go and do it again. I always find that actually we were saying with your Aspiration Digital talk, the fact that you got to do it twice in one day is brilliant.
It is.
Because you get to get straight back up. Whereas normally you do it once and you're like, oh, I need to go and put another pitch in to go and speak somewhere because I want to do that again because I feel like there's things I could do better. Mm. But that's great because if you think you did it perfectly, well, you might be a bit, not focused on how you can improve yourself. But actually, if you're like, do you know, I could have done that. It was all right. I did well. I'm really pleased. I'm buzzing. It was great. But next time I want to do this, this and this. Great. Go find next time.
And it's having that growth mindset. It's like, I might not be good at that now, but actually, I might not be good at that in 10 years' time. I'm still going to keep doing it because I'm not good at that yet.
Yeah.
Not, I'm not good at that, full stop.
The best word, yeah. Kirsty Hulse taught us that, didn't she, when she did her training? There's an amazing lady. We'll give Kirsty Hulse a shout out. She's fantastic and she's a confidence trainer. She runs a conference called Confidence Live and everything she does is around confidence. And yeah, that growth mindset piece around I can't do this yet is just the best thing because you can learn if you want to. Like, we can all get better at things. It's, Oh, that was a good question. What other questions have you got on your mind?
Oh, I think most of them have been answered. I'm probably just going to keep coming flooding back into my head. But at the moment, they've all been answered.
Yeah. What's the most important thing we haven't asked you that you think about your career?
I guess it's...
Matt do the hard work.
Yeah. I guess for me, the growth mindset stuff comes back to the skills and what are the valuable skills to have. I think what I've learned over my career is that what I know now is not what's going to give me the best benefit in 5 years' time. It's going to be something that I don't know yet that's going to make the real difference and be that next step. So it's being open to new stuff. And like I say, with keeping up with the AI industry is be on newsletters, read about your sort of exciting areas of experience or things that you want to learn or be happy to go, actually, that may not be something I'm interested in now, but there may be a small nugget of that that drives me to the next thing, to the next thing. And being open to those new opportunities and learning those new skills is actually what's going to drive your career, not I'm on this path and I can do this thing. And in 5 years' time, I'm going to be in exactly the same place, but with 5 years more experience and I can step up this ladder that someone's determined for me. I think I'm the perfect example of make your own ladder. Build the skills. If you know you want to get to somewhere, there is a way to get there. You just need to find out what that is.
Yeah, no, I love that. I really love that.
Aspiration Digital is the one-day careers conference to help young people get started in the digital industry. We are just planning our next events and we are planning to move around the UK. So this is your opportunity. If you follow the link in the show notes, you can suggest that we come to your local area and get your school listed on the waitlist. Follow the link now and pop your details in. We hope to see you at a future event.
I'd say one of the things you're really good at, this centered out, I feel like I've given you a lot of praise in this.
It's nice. I'll come
back. Yeah, come back. But one of the things you're really good at is feedback. You're good at taking feedback. You're good at giving feedback. And you're really open to feedback. And actually, as an employer, and I suppose it depends on the employer, we love feedback. We soak up and relish feedback. Some businesses don't want to hear it because it's hard sometimes, because it's things that you're like, oh, we did miss the mark there, or oh, we could have done that better. But oh my word, it's good we know, because we can do something about it if we know. But yeah, how has that been something you've always been good at? And yeah,
similar to confidence, it's a skill that you develop. And I think what I pushed past was a real sort of fear of failure in my own work, of going, oh, I don't like being judged, and if I present something that's not perfect, that's not good, and it's gonna drive this and that and the other, and being really scared about that. And I had to push past that and go, actually, the only way I'm going to get better is by failing and getting feedback. And I want the most honest, the most transparent, like accurate stuff. Again, data brain, probably. I want to know, how do I fix this and get it better? And I think that's something that Reflect is great at, and the Human First Collective in general, is we want to do better. We're not always going to get it right first time, but we are going to keep trying and keep improving. And that growth mindset of knowing what didn't go as well as it could have is how you find out what the next step is. So that's something that I've developed as a skill, is being able to articulate what didn't go as well as it could have and how that person can do something about it. Because quite often you'll get feedback of, oh, it wasn't great. It's like, well, why wasn't that great? What can we do to fix it? Give the person some ideas about where they might be able to explore a different route or a different way of communicating that. If it's a talk, how can they make that better in your opinion? And again, they don't have to take your feedback, but if you can provide it in a way that gives them space to not feel judged and feel that fear of, oh, that went really badly, that's what's going to help them the most. And actually, they'll come back. I mean, that's what's happened at Reflect, is I give some feedback, someone's like, oh, that was really useful. They'll come back and ask me again, and we can build that relationship and that trust where actually I can say something and not feel like I'm being a bit rude or being judgmental in some way, because I'm providing them with value.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't see it from your opinion unless you tell us.
Exactly.
We don't sit in your shoes to know what happened, how it felt, what you saw. So it's I'm such a believer in feedback, but it is a skill you have to hone, because especially asking for feedback, it is a bit uncomfortable when it's not what you want to hear. You're like, oh, I didn't realise that. It's a bit of a shame. But then it's like, how good is it that I know? But also, feedback's an opinion. So sometimes you go, do you know what? I don't know if that, like, I think there's an anomaly there. Maybe that isn't something that I need to do anything with. But that's a choice that you have at the point that you've heard the feedback. But other than that, if you don't know, it's like, oh, I can't do anything about it. I can't grow if I don't know. So
exactly. You're allowed to disagree. And I think that's the thing, is the person that you're talking to and is giving you your feedback might not be the target audience of what you're trying to say or what you're trying to do. So again, keep that in mind and don't necessarily go, oh, that was bad because this one person said so. Maybe if you're doing it, talk or a new presentation or trying to pitch for something, talk to a couple of different people that you think are close to what your actual audience is, and they'll give you sort of that averaged view and not just one person's opinion.
Yeah, love that. Who looked at the pitch presentation before we saw it?
Quite a few people, and I think we talked about it earlier, but finding what the business cares about is how you develop that audience and go, okay, I know that my line manager is obviously going to care what I do, so I need to talk to him and I need to get his opinion. I need to talk to other people who maybe aren't directly involved in what I do every day to make sure that it makes sense. Like, if you don't have the technical knowledge, your feedback is just as useful if my audience doesn't have that technical knowledge. So yeah, quite a few people saw it before you did.
Okay. Well, it was so bang on. I was like, yeah, maybe someone else must have seen this as well. But no, it was good. But again, that's the process, isn't it? It's not being in a rush to go, oh, I've got this idea and I've got to tell them today. It's like, no, hold on, I've got to be considered. I've got to think about this. I've got to take the right steps. Even if that takes me 3 months before I feel ready, I'll know I've done it justice, rather than blurt it out and hope for the best.
Yeah, first impressions count. Yeah. And giving someone the best version of an idea is the best way to get their buy-in.
Yeah, well, because otherwise, if it's not fully formed, they can be a bit like, oh, I don't know, Matt. And then your confidence gets knocked a bit. And then they're a bit less enthusiastic about the next conversation because they're like, I don't know what this guy was on, but it's, I don't know if it's right. And it's like, you've got to, so it's better to be able to go in and smash it.
Yeah,
first
and you
attempt.
Can have the seed of an idea, but actually what's really valuable is a fully fleshed out idea with a plan, with associated things. What does that mean? What's next? What do I do? What do you need from me? If that audience is sitting there going, this is a great idea, but how can I help? What can I do? Communicating that to them and giving them a really clear, this is what I want, this is what I need, this is what it's going to do for you. That's how you get the buy-in.
Mm. Your talk at Aspiration Digital was very well regarded by the students. There was a lot of feedback. I didn't actually get to see it. I've seen the slides, but I haven't seen the delivery. What do you think the students, what were they taking away from it? What was the essence of the talk?
I think it was that it's a really exciting time to be at the start of your career because of things like AI and technology being so democratized and so accessible. I mean, we have some of the most powerful AI systems ever developed on our phones for free. Mm. And that is such a wild concept in terms of how you can push your career forwards, because that's never been the case before. And things are moving so fast. And I mean, digital natives is a concept that came up back when millennials were the youngest generation. But we've got two more generations since then. And now you're AI natives. So there's such a huge opportunity to learn, develop your skills, push things in a way that maybe our generations have no idea about and aren't going to be able to come up with those ideas. So being at the start of that almost revolution is a really great place to be, and to almost take control of that and your careers and your destiny in terms of the world of work or passions or hobbies, it's yours to take.
Yeah. So exciting.
It is exciting. I'm really excited.
I love it. Are you using AI at the moment?
A little bit, yeah. I'll use it for schoolwork. Yeah, and just a little questions here and there, but yeah,
it's impressive though, isn't it?
Yeah,
it comes back, and yeah, it's the journey since ChatGPT came out and got into the hands of us normal people to see it, like how quickly it's advanced. And it's, yeah, what have you got any predictions of what's happening next, what to expect?
I think the biggest thing that I notice about AI at the moment is that we talk about it in a very different way than we talk about other technologies. So machine learning is a perfect example where we don't really talk about that as a thing in and of itself. You don't interact with a machine learning tool. You get recommendations from Spotify. You get Google Maps to tell you where to go. It's all integrated and hidden and behind the scenes. And I think that's what we'll see with AI, is it's this really exciting thing that's all new, and it is an AI tool. And I mean, every stock that has AI in it goes up because everyone's excited about the buzz of AI, and people are putting it on things that aren't even AI because it works and people are excited about it. But what we'll see is that that will start to fade away. Everyone knows what AI is, and we'll start to see it integrated into what we do every day. And I think that will be where businesses that really understand how it works and how that can be practically applied are going to get the best benefit, because they'll integrate it in a way that isn't going to cause you to have to go over here and do this and then connect it to that thing. It's all going to be seamless.
Mm. Do you think, because we've just started looking internally about search and where that's going, because there are some really practical applications where actually asking an AI versus asking Google, although Google's got their AI overviews, it's not giving answers in the same format yet as something like ChatGPT is. So yeah, I don't know. Have you got any thoughts on that?
I think we'll get more personalized in terms of search, because Google's great at ranking the best average thing for what someone searching those six words probably wants. And so there's a lot of guesswork in there, whereas AI is great at giving you the right information presented in a way that you've asked for it. And we'll get versions of ChatGPT, Gemini, all of these tools that are almost curated to what we like, how we best consume information. Because, I mean, everyone's aware of learning theory. Some people learn best by doing or listening or seeing. And so that's what we'll get from AI tools, is the best way that we consume information is how that's going to be presented to us, because we can have our own versions of all of these things that are curated and trained on what we like and how we do things.
Mm. It is mad, isn't it? Mm. And it is mad, as you say, that that phone in your pocket, the amount of computing power we are carrying around with us. It's just, I still, like, in my head at the moment, I've still got a vision of, like, when my dad got his first car phone that was literally a phone in the car. And people didn't think it would take off. They were like, why would I need to use the phone when I'm not at home? And yet here we are today. I mean, most of us, like, if you leave the house without your phone, it's like you've left your head behind, isn't it? You're like, oh, I've got to go back and get it because I can't cope in society. Well, also, it's my wallet. It's my it's my key to my car. It's everything. It's, which means it's easier not to leave at home now, actually, because I can't actually get in the car.
You can't leave without it.
So it's kind of handy, actually, what they've done there. Mm. But yeah, I don't know. It's exciting. We're at such an exciting time. And what would you say to people that say, oh, there won't be any jobs left, AI is going to take them all?
I think predicting the future has always been a bit of a fool's game. Like, be excited about it and be open to the possibilities, but don't plan on certain specific outcomes happening. I think we know that AI will take certain kinds of jobs because those jobs are maybe only doing what AI is very, very good at. But the people who know how to use it and apply it are going to have completely new jobs that are going to come up and emerge from those things. I mean, the World Economic Forum, I believe, said that they expect around a 40% increase in data analyst and AI specialist roles. So that's a whole new industry that's growing really, really rapidly over the next couple of years that isn't filled with other jobs that we're currently doing. It's completely new stuff. So yes, it might take certain kinds of jobs and it might shift the way that we operate, but it's not AI that's going to take your job. It's someone else who knows how to use AI that's going to take the job.
I love that. I saw the other day, actually, someone posted on LinkedIn, Marks and Spencer's. I don't know if they've done this everywhere or if they're trialing it, but because obviously one of the things when you go to the supermarket now, it's all automated, isn't it? You go in, you can just check out all your own stuff and you walk out the shop and it's all over. They've put in a slow lane with a person and they've actually called it that. And they've said, if you fancy a chat, this is the lane for you. And you can take it as slow as you like. And you can have a chat. And that staff member will be someone that likes to have a chat with people. Because actually, I quite enjoy that at the supermarket. I'm always chatting to the person if I get to speak to someone. But I think it would be interesting to see, and a bit like you said earlier around the kind of the human in the loop side of things, and actually if that will become more valuable, that something's been human verified. Are we going to see more kind of pushback going, okay, it's great that we've got technology, and if you want to get out of Marks and Sparks as quick as possible, go use those lanes. But if you're here having a bit of a ploddy day and you want to be able to have a chat, go have a chat at the checkout. And I thought that was really clever. I like that.
And I think it's what we're going to see everywhere is that personalization of not just the experiences we have online, but in-person experiences are really valuable and people do enjoy that personal contact. Mm. But some people maybe just want to grab lunch and go very, very quickly. So Amazon's stores where you don't even have to check out, you just walk out and it'll bill you automatically. That's perfect for that kind of person who doesn't want to have the conversation. So we are going to see those shifts where we have to learn more and understand more about what people actually want and actually value rather than what we think they might.
Mm. That technology blows my mind, the way you can just walk out the store.
Yeah.
It's a bit like if you've been into a Decathlon and they've got like the basket and you can just chuck as many things as you've got in your hand into the basket at the till and just immediately it comes up with everything that you're buying. And I'm like, but how? I didn't scan it. But it obviously it's, I don't know, it's reading it somehow. But it must be the same as kind of almost what Amazon's doing as you walk out the door.
Yeah. And I mean, there's loads of technologies like that that have been sort of incorporated to change the experience that we have and we almost expect going into stores like that. We've seen in Tokyo, for example, there were bakeries, there was bakery scan, I think was the technology, where there were huge amounts of different pastries that bakeries were offering and people really wanted these fresh looking pastries that weren't wrapped or labeled because that was what sold, I think, almost three times as well as wrapped and prepackaged ones. But that meant that the sort of till assistants, the checkouts, had to know all of them. It was unsanitary. It was quite a slow process. So they introduced a technology that would scan all of the pastries, all of the pies, the croissants and everything, work out what they were, how much it costed, and give you a little bill at the end. So it's technology like that being integrated that's really exciting. But I think we're also looking at those opportunities of technology being applied in ways that we don't expect. So that bakery scan technology, it was so good that someone produced a news segment on it and talked about, oh, this is amazing. You can put all your pastries and it'll automatically calculate it for you. And someone on the other side of the country was watching that and they were a medical researcher and they realized that under a microscope, cancer cells look quite a lot like bread. And so they deployed the same system to identify cancerous cells, and that revolutionized how fast we can process whether a tissue sample is cancerous or not. So it's those cross-linking industries using technology in ways that we don't necessarily expect that are going to drive huge amounts of change that we can't predict, but we have to be open to.
Love that. Love that. Mm. So imagine we can jump in a time machine now and we can go back and we can have Matt, 17, at the table. Other than giving him a spoiler alert that he's a problem solver, what would you want to tell him? What do you think would help set him up for success?
I think the thing that certainly affected me the most at that age was a fear of failure. It was not knowing what I wanted to do, not having a plan, not really understanding who I was. And I think certainly growing up gay is a whole preface of experience for that kind of thing. Mm. But it's applicable to everything else as well. It's find out who you are, what motivates you, and don't fear what other people think you are. Don't let their expectations dictate what your career is going to look like, what your life is going to look like. Plan things the way that you want them to be, because that's the only way that you'll be happy with the outcome.
Yeah, I love that. Bring your whole self.
Exactly.
It's definitely part of our culture, is we just want people to be themselves and be happy. Life is too short to not enjoy what you do.
Exactly. And people who enjoy what they do are better at it.
Yeah. Yeah. More productive, better work, better everything. It's, yeah. So hopefully this is going to have inspired some people to have a think about things that they might like doing and how to dig into them. So this has been amazing. Matt, you have been wonderful. I knew you would be. So I had a spoiler alert there. Thank you so much. Jess, wonderful conversation as always. We look forward to seeing you on a future episode of Behind the Future.
That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.